Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18+, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
My Unsung Hero, with Chelsea Grimes on Talk Sport.
I'm Chelsea Grimes, I'm a singer, songwriter and footballer.
And the ball's play through for Chelsea Grimes!
You're listening to My Unsung Hero on TalkSport. The inspiration behind this show was basically just because I meet a lot of players on and off the pitch, you know, on TV, behind the microphone, and some of the best stories don't come from the players, they actually come from the family, the friends, so I thought, why not make a show about it? Now, some weeks the Unsung Hero joins us, and some weeks they play up to the name and they're a little bit camera shy, so we just speak to the star. No footballer reaches the elite level on their own, and in this show, we talk about the person who played a pivotal role in getting them to where they are today. This week, I'm speaking with one of the leading players in the women's game, the captain of Manchester City and England. She scored for Great Britain at the Olympics, and on the 2016 New Year's Honours list, she was awarded an MBE for her services to football.
Steph Horton with the goal. She scored once again in the last 16 of a World Cup.
Hi, I'm Steph Horton, and my unsung hero is my dad, Len.
She is just an inspiration to me and whoever plays the game, in the women's game, in the men's game. You know, it's just amazing to listen to the struggle, the come up, you know, the ups, the downs, and, you know, about the people who have been there supporting her throughout it. I hope you enjoy this one. This is Steph Horton, my unsung hero. Okay, guys, I am very, very excited for this one. I'm joined by England Lioness and just all-round amazing legend, Steph Horton. Steph, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. I'm very, very excited to talk to you and get deep in your unsung hero. So we're going to kick things off with the first question we ask everyone. Steph, who is your unsung hero and why?
My unsung hero is my dad, Len, mainly for the reason of he was the one that introduced us to playing football, and for everything that I've achieved in my career, the foundations that he set me as a person and as a player has really allowed us to have the career that I have, and he supported us every single day since.
Yes, Len, we love it. Well, usually on Unsung Hero, we speak to the player and also, you know, the unsung hero, but I'm presuming, you know, Len is a bit camera shy, so he's missing this one out.
A little bit camera shy and stuck at work, so yeah, I think he's probably best out on missing this one. He'll probably get a bit shy if I'm speaking about him anyway.
Well, I'm sure we'll be talking a lot about him. So let's start. Let's talk about your upbringing. You know, you grew up in Sunderland. Tell me about your life then. You know, what was it like back then?
I mean, obviously, come from the northeast. I come from a big family. My dad's one of seven boys. My mum's one of four. And pretty much my life from the moment that I could start walking, running was always sport. No matter whether it was playing the street at school, and it wasn't just football. It was any sport like cricket, athletics, hockey, tennis. It was just any excuse to play some sport, sort of sport, it was always made. So for me, I've had an unbelievable upbringing. I come from a pit village who are very sporty but also so supportive. And I think we always talk about women in football and girls who grew up in football, and the people around us really made it a possibility, really. I think they always supported everything that I did and they knew that I had talent, but they always kept my feet on the ground. And I think everybody says never forget where you come from and your upbringing, and I certainly wouldn't be able to do that anyway.
Yes, well, you haven't lost the accent and neither have I, so that shows that we've stuck to our roots. You just mentioned a few other sports. Obviously, you mentioned cricket. I was never really into cricket, but for me, it was always... I played a bit of tennis, but mainly football. You know, what was the age when you were like, all right, you know what, this is what I want to be? And was being a professional always just up there for you?
Yeah, I mean... Probably at the time when I was playing like all different sports, I never ever regret that, because I think you learn so many different skills from doing different sports. And the reason I liked cricket was because in our village we had a local cricket club, and that was the thing to do on a Saturday, was to go and support the team. And there was like a little bit of grass next to the cricket field when the lads were playing cricket. Like all the kids of the parents that were playing would all just play, and it was either football or you'd actually play cricket. And I think it was really when I was about... probably 10, 11 at the time. I think I was doing so much sport other than football, and my nights were taken up by, say, I used to do taekwondo and used to play cricket. I used to do stuff at school, and there actually was no more free nights to do anything else. And mum and dad were like, look, you can't really do everything. And always the sport that stuck out was football. And I knew at the time that I couldn't really... class it as a profession, and it wasn't something I was aiming to do, because ultimately there was no opportunities there for girls to do that. And but I knew I always wanted to play, so it was kind of like, okay, I just need to make sure that I keep working hard at school, get good grades, but still train with Sunderland at the time as much as I can, and the local team, Bolden as it was then, and just try and keep playing football just because I loved it so much. And I think it was only until I was about 18 that I was like, right, okay, well, I could actually make like a living out of this and a career out of it as I went on.
As a curling effort, it's brilliant from Steph Horton. The immediate reply. What a fantastic strike from Horton.
When I was growing up, I played in a boys' team too. I'm not sure if that happened to you, if you were in mixed teams. And did you ever encounter any problems or difficulties playing in the boys' teams? What's your point on that?
Yeah, I think my first ever team was my school team, and that happened to be a mixed team. And there was me and my best friend and my cousin Amy, that were only girls that were allowed on the team. And I think in terms of problems, I think it's more people being judgmental and actually forming an opinion before they've actually seen your player. And because I was a girl, and I can always remember being picked ahead of someone, ahead of one of the lads in my first ever game for the team. And I know on the sidelines, I think even my mum and my dad had heard other parents kind of like saying little things. They'd say, why is she playing? She's a girl, she shouldn't be playing. And it's just this automatic judgment and perception that because I'm female, I don't have the right to be on the pitch. And I think for me, I was probably strong enough and tough enough to kind of go, right, okay, well, I'll prove you wrong. I'll make sure that you don't want to judge us anymore, because I'm going to prove that I'm actually better than your son and I'm better than most of the lads on this team. And it happened to be a good day, because I ended up managing scoring two. and I can remember the day just like it was yesterday, I think, because it meant so much to try and go, right, okay, well, I've got every right to play a sport that I love as much as the lad next to us. And I think once that moment was over, I think you start to see people accept that actually girls have got every opportunity to play football as much as the lad next to us.
Yeah, it's honestly, I remember being the only girl in my primary school team, and before kickoff, like a few of their team were like, oh, they've got a girl on the team. And I was like, I was only a kid, you know, like 10, 11. And I remember just feeling like I was about to cry, but I didn't, held it in. And then I went and scored. And when I was running back to like the halfway line, I was like crying. And like, it was so emotional, but like, obviously, you know, people don't see what we had to go through. It was difficult back then, you know. My sister plays now, she's 11, and it's completely different. And they're all, it's amazing how far it's come, is the point of that, I think. You're listening to My Unsung Hero on TalkSport with me, Chelsea Grimes. In this series, I sit down with some of the best footballers to have ever played the game, speaking about the people who've played a pivotal role in getting them to where they are today.
The foundations that he set me as a person and as a player has really allowed us to have the career that I have.
This week, I'm speaking with England captain Steph Horton, whose unsung hero is her dad, Len. Steph also mentioned the number of influencers from within the game who she also sees as unsung heroes, because without them, she really wouldn't have made it to where she is today. Some of them include former England manager Hope Powell, as well as former club bosses Michael Mulhern, Vic Akers and Nick Cushion. Steph is just so humble. She's such an inspiration, and you can tell when talking to her, you know, she's still so, so thankful to those who have helped her throughout her career. This is Steph Horton, my unsung hero. So at the age of 9, you know, you're scouted by Sunderland. It wasn't professional then, but how often did you train? And is it true that at the age of 9, you were actually training with 16-year-olds?
Yeah, that's true. I think the story was that my mum and dad sent us to a Sunderland soccer school, you know, like in the Easter holidays where basically they just want to get you out of the house. They've probably had enough of you after one day, and I wasn't the best person to be in the house anyway. And they're like, right, okay, go with your mates, go and have 2 days at this course. And ultimately I got scouted there after 2 days there. Obviously Sunderland were trying to build a centre of excellence, a girls team, and they were like, right, okay, well, why don't you come and train with us? So I was like dead excited, I can always remember, and I remember turning up and my dad took us and he was like, is this the right place, Steph? And I was like, well, I don't know. I says, that you've got the address, like, we'll see what it is. And he's like, God, these girls look a bit too old for you. And yeah, my first ever session was Sunderland with under 16 players, which is, when I think about it now, it's absolutely crazy, but I would never have changed it for the world. I think you kind of have to grow up quick, especially in football, in terms of you want to show them what you're about, but at the same time, you've got to obviously change the way that you do things, maybe because you are playing against bigger girls and older players that have played a long time. But yeah, I can remember that day like yesterday, and it's surreal when I think about it now.
That's incredible. I mean, yeah, the things you'll have to learn quick playing against under 16s when you're 9 is probably like grow another 4 feet in an hour.
Even like the language that they were using, I was obviously never really around people that swore or whatever and stuff. And it was just like, oh my God, like, I don't really know what to reply or what to say. You're just kind of like dead shy. I was dead shy anyway and probably a little bit now. But even then, I probably didn't even say anything for about 5-10 sessions probably.
Yeah, you come out your session and you potty mouth into Len on the way home. He's like, yeah. What's going on?
I think
on?
He was like, are you in a state of shock? And I'm like, I don't actually know what just happened.
Okay, so I try and every part of the episode as well, really make someone like yourself, you know, think back and like remember your first time. So like your debut, if you could sit there for like a good 5 seconds now and just remember that feeling. I mean, did Len give you any advice? Like, what feeling was that like to make your debut?
Unreal. I think, like, now I'm like, I'm just smiling because I'm just like, it's everything that I ever wanted to do. And to get it at the age of 13, and I know that I've been playing well for Sunderland Reserves, and I got the call up from the manager and he was like, right, okay, you're going to be on the bench today against Lincoln. And I was like, oh my God, like, Dad, like, I'm actually on the bench, like, and he's like, oh, just take it all in, like, doesn't matter if you don't come on, like, just learn off all the girls, enjoy the game. And I think I can remember we were drawing 1-1 and the manager said, go and get warmed up, Steph. And I was like, me? Nah, surely he's lying, because there was actually 2 Stephs on the bench. And I was like, oh, must be the other one. He's like, no, go, you go and get warmed up. And I think he came on for the last 20 minutes and actually scored, which was,
I think, 13.
Yeah, I mean, obviously that would never be able to happen now, but I think you kind of just go on and you just kind of just go, right, okay, I'm just going to enjoy myself. And I think I had that attitude go, well, he's actually trusting us, the manager, to go on and play. And I think that was the last thing my dad said. He was like, just take your chance and just show them what you're about. And to have that experience was amazing. To have all the family there watching was pretty cool as well.
She rolls it to Steph Horton, who slams it in low through the crowd of players, and England take the lead.
You also make your England debut in a 6-0 win over Russia, March 2007. Again, another proud moment for you and your family. Can you talk us through that? What was that like?
Yeah, I mean, I think we played at Milton Keynes that day, and I told my dad that I was going to be on the bench, and I was like, look, Dad, I don't even think I'm going to get on. Like, we had so many players in the squad. Like, it was a World Cup like qualifying year. The competition was massive, and we had so many players. I was like, don't even bother coming down. It would just be pointless coming from work straight away to travel 3-4 hours in the car. And he's like, no, look, Steph, I'm coming just in case you get on for a minute. And
yeah.
I think obviously he's probably the best decision he's ever made, bless him, is just like traveling down straight after work with his mate to come and watch. And I think, yeah, I mean, you kind of think it's so surreal to come on and to play in a game with the likes of Kelly and Fair and Rachel Yankee and Farrah Williams, who are absolute legends, and for them to help you through your debut and have that moment that your family can enjoy was obviously a massive moment for everybody.
Well, we're going to take it from the biggest high to maybe a potential one of the biggest lows for you, yeah, very quickly. But this is what this is about. You know, you broke your leg, ruling you out of the 2007 World Cup. How hard was that for you to take? And, you know, your unsung hero, Len, how important was he in that process?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the story was that I would have been probably the youngest player to play in a World Cup. Me and Jill Scott would go and work up home in the northeast, and we'd go and do our running sessions together. We'd have to go Gateshead and do our strength sessions. And I think it was 2 days before we were about to fly, and it was my very last session that I had to do. I was jumping over like the racing hurdles, and it was like continuous jumps, and I just literally clipped one a tiny bit with my shoe and just rolled my ankle, and I was just like, oh, this is not good. Obviously got rushed to hospital, said I had like a spiral fracture of my ankle, which obviously automatically ruled us out of the tournament, which I was absolutely devastated because you're so close to going. And yeah, for them few weeks and watching the tournament over there wasn't nice. Obviously it was a 3 month recovery, and I was young, I'd never really experienced a big injury like that, so the likes of my dad and my family were massive in that sense. I think people probably don't know what you go through in an injury, but you're obviously sitting at home alone, you're having to do rehab exercises that are not really interesting whatsoever. But he was always like, look, Steph, this is your new training program now. This is what you've got to do. And even if you think it's boring, you're going to have to do it. And you've got to get in the right mindset to be able to come back better. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, it wasn't always perfect. There's sometimes when I was like, I don't want to do it, Dad. Like, what's the point? Like, I'm missing a World Cup for this, blah, blah. And of course, there's discussions and arguments. But at the same time, I think you give yourself an hour and you go, right, okay, well, he was right. And you kind of reflect in the sense that for this time only, you are right. And yeah, he was amazing. Obviously, he knows what I'm like. He knows that, like, I love my football, I love training, and that's what I do every single day. So to have that taken away from us was going to be tough. But I think everything happens for reasons, and that reason was for me to have an opportunity to get even better and become stronger, not just physically, but mentally as well.
Yeah, I don't think people understand, you know, as players, how difficult it is for you guys when you go through something like an injury. You know, 2009, the Euros, you missed that as well with cruciate ligament. You know, is that probably the lowest part of your game and your mindset when you do have a injury and you're missing out on stuff like that?
Yeah, massively. I think obviously injuries stops you doing what you love to do, which is to be on the pitch. And when you're rehabbing and you're not sure when you're going to come back, I mean, the ACL injury was probably the worst because I knew for a fact I was going to be missing a year of my career. Yeah. And at the time, I was actually starting for England. I'd played really well in the Cyprus Cup, and I looked to be going into a tournament where I was going to start at centre-half. So, I mean, it just seemed to be every 2 years I was getting injured, and from freak injuries as well. I mean, the hurdle one with my ankle, but then this one was a tackle where I didn't even get a penalty. That's, I'm still mad about that now. How it wasn't a penalty, I don't even know. But yeah, I mean, people always laugh about my skinny legs and the fact that I've got the skinniest ankles, and I'm just like, yeah, well, for me, I wish I had a bit more muscle on there, just because obviously probably maybe it prevented these injuries. But yeah, I think every sports person goes through it, whether the major injuries are little niggles. I think psychologically it just really like irritates you because you just want to do everything properly. You want to be out with your teammates on the pitch, and there's some lonely days, but ultimately you just got to try and stay focused and I had an unbelievable support network, not just from my family, but obviously England, my club at the time, who were Leeds, that were supporting us every step of the way as much as they can.
Plenty more to come on Steph Horton, my unsung hero, including how being appointed England captain left her family and unsung hero in tears.
Obviously phoned home, I think both my mum and dad were crying on the phone. My brother was absolutely over the moon. He was just like, you're taking the mick, aren't you? I was like, no, Stuart, I'm not. I promise this is true.
This is Steph Horton, my unsung hero, with me, Chelsea Grimes, on TalkSport.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to one full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Steph Horton, my unsung hero, on Talk Sport.
You're listening to My Unsung Hero on TalkSport with me, Chelsea Grimes. This is the show where we get to talk to some of the best footballers to have ever played the game and also talk to them about their unsung hero. You know, the people behind the scenes who don't get enough credit for being there on the good times and the bad. Now, some weeks the unsung hero joins us and some weeks they play up to the name and they're a little bit camera shy, so we just speak to the star.
He was the one that introduced us to playing football and he supported us every single day since.
This week, we're talking to England captain Steph Horton, whose unsung hero is her dad, Len. Let's give Len another little shout out here. So, you know, what advice, because this is what this show's about, you know, not only speaking to the players, but talking when things go amazingly well and also, you know, when you hit a few low moments in a career early on or later down the line. What advice did your dad give you when you were thinking about making this a real profession for yourself?
I think he was like, just you've got to be committed 100%. It's not like you can just one day be committed and then the next day you can't. I think everything that I wanted was there for us, and it was just whether I wanted to kind of take it and work hard to be the best and to represent my country and play for big clubs like Arsenal and Man City. And he was just like, you've just got to get your head down and work hard, and you've got amazing coaches around you. Make sure you listen and make sure you try and improve every session. And look, I think the reason he's probably my unsung hero is probably you don't see the conversations we have when potentially some things have gone bad or I haven't played a good game. I think there's that honesty and trust that I get from that he actually gets it, and he's not around every single day in terms of watching what I do in training, but he's there when I need him the most. And I think from the beginning of my career, I had so many ups and downs, and it was a bit of a whirlwind. And to try and get used to that, you need people that are constant in your life and who are going to give you that advice. And but ultimately just go, right, okay, well, you can't change that now, Steph. You've just got to get on and you've just got to work hard and get fitter, get stronger, listen to your coaches and just try and do the best that you can.
Howden is double teamed, goes up between them, heads it down, far post. That makes every coach proud.
You've gone on to become one of the most important players in the history of the England national team. You were appointed captain in 2014. Do you remember that moment? I'm sure you do, but let's go through it again.
Yeah, I mean, I think that moment there was probably, if I asked like what my dad's proudest moment would be, would probably be named England captain. I think all the stuff that I've achieved in my career, he would still say that to this day. And yeah, it was really surreal. I think obviously the new manager came in, Mark Sampson, and I can remember having a conversation in the January, which was his first month and the first month of the camp. And he was like, right, okay, well, we've got two games and I'd like you to be captain for one. And I'm like, who, me? Like, I'm 26. I've only probably got about 30 caps. There's people that have got over 100 caps in this squad. They've got more experience. And at the time, I was captain of Arsenal. So I think that kind of helped in terms of I'd been doing that for 6-7 months of that season. And I'd done all right, and I think that maybe put is in his mind a little bit. So anyway, captain, in terms of there was me and a few of the other girls had the rotation of being the captain, and I remember in April he was like, I'd just had a phone call off and he was like, could you come to reception, and we're in St George's Park, and if you've been there before, literally it's just like big sofas where the reception is. And I was like, well, where should I meet you? He's like, just come reception and we'll just sit and chat. And I was like, oh, this can't be good. It's like 9 o'clock at night. Like, what have I done wrong? I'm trying to go through the day of what I've done. Have I filled in my forms? Like, have I done my gym kind of thing? You're doubting yourself. But it was obviously the best conversation. I think he was just like, so how do you fancy being my captain? And I'm like, you're joking. You're actually joking. I actually didn't have a clue. And he was like, no, I'm being serious, Steph. Like, we need someone for the future of the team, someone that's going to be able to play and lead the girls. And he was like, so is that okay? And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, but don't tell anyone. I was just like, oh, can I not tell my dad and my mum?
Like,
and he was like,
thing.
Obviously phoned home. I think both my mum and dad were crying on the phone. My brother was absolutely over the moon. He was just like, you're taking the mick, aren't you? I was like, no, Stuart, I'm not. I promise this is true. And I think from that moment, to keep that a secret for the next couple of days was hard, but ultimately the best conversation I've ever had, I think.
Oh, incredible. Yeah, well, you'll be good at keeping the Christmas presents a surprise then, if you could keep that.
I try to.
Oh, Steph, honestly, just talking to you about it, you know, like I said, you're a massive inspiration to me and pretty much every girl who enjoys the game. You're just incredible. But let's talk about the World Cup 2015 in Canada. You know, you took the team further than they've ever been before in a World Cup. You know, you eventually lost in heartbreaking fashion to Japan in the semis.
Yeah.
Just talk to me about the memories in that, the highs and the lows for you on a personal level.
I think obviously excited to captain the team in a World Cup. I think ultimately we had no real expectation on us to go and do anything over there. I think the expectation on ourselves was just to take it game by game and see where we go. And ultimately the strengths of that team was that we had so many players that could do so many different jobs, and everybody knew the role in the team and everybody had a part to play, whether it was in the first game or the last game. And I think as the tournament went on and every game went on, we got stronger and stronger. The performances were better, and we didn't play the best football in terms of everybody liked watching us play, but we were certainly effective and we found a way to win. And yeah, we have so many memories from going there and winning a bronze medal, and probably one of my most enjoyable tournaments, I think, just because we got on the pitch right as much as we could, but off the pitch we created so many memories with each other that everybody was able to enjoy themselves, and that obviously showed on the pitch as well.
And obviously that's got to have helped. And I know already you're going to say, yeah, but your experience then, you know, leading on to the 2019 World Cup, again as captain. By this point, you'd made over 100 caps. So how different was that to 2015 for you?
I think from us going into that tournament, we really had the belief that we were going to win. We thought we had the players to do that. We had a squad that was had a great blend of youth and experience that can come on and perform on the world stage. And we had a really good build-up to the tournament, but I think we were nearly there, but we just weren't good enough in that semi-final game against America. I think the first 20 minutes was an opportunity for us to take the game to them, and they got a hold of it quicker than what we did, and they probably had more experience of playing in them semi-finals than we did, and obviously playing in front of big crowds. But ultimately, it was an unbelievable tournament. We did as best that we could, and we were just short on that final bit of quality.
Steph Horton, when she's scored, England have never lost. She steps up, right-footed. Oh, it's saved! Oh, it is saved down to the right by Elisa Meyer, and England have missed another penalty, and they've missed it at the most crucial time of the World Cup, with 7 minutes remaining in the World Cup semi-final.
When that semi-final, you know, if you look back at that, did it take you a minute to get over that, or was it just boom out your head, right, let's knuckle down?
I think as obviously missing the penalty didn't really help, in the sense of that obviously there was a lot of talk about me missing it and why I should have took it, and but obviously the manager and the goalkeeper coach was like, Steph, you're taking the penalty, so step up. And I felt as though I was brave enough to take that, and ultimately on another day that probably goes in, or I connect with it better. But I think in terms of getting over it, we obviously had a game 2 days later against Sweden, which everybody was desperate to play, and we had a chance of winning a bronze medal again. And I think we just, to get over that semi-final as a squad was so much harder than it was in 2015 for some reason. I think maybe because of expectation, because we're playing games at a higher intensity. I think we just kind of ran out of steam at the end of the tournament. And we had about 2 weeks off to kind of rest and obviously go on holiday with you. I went on holiday with Stephen, or to go on holiday with the family, and you try and use that to try and get over it, but it takes longer than 2 weeks to kind of get that out of your system. And obviously now, I think when I'm talking about it now, I'm like so frustrated, because I'm just like, we were so close.
Yeah, you talked about the penalty there. I mean, there was a lot of talk about that, but you know, for you, what's Len like in that situation there? What did he say to you after that?
I mean, obviously you can tell by his face that he's gutted. I think more just for everybody, not just for me. And I think his words were, look, like, I can't be any more proud of you. You've had an unbelievable tournament. You've played every game. You've done everything you could. And you didn't mean to miss the penalty. It just happens. And I think sometimes you just need to say that. And I think the nicest thing was that after that game, all the families came back to the hotel, and we normally wouldn't do that. But I think Phil was like, look, get all the families back. There was obviously loads of them travelled out, and it was, I think that at that moment in time, you'd probably just need your family. I needed my dad, I needed my mum, I needed my husband. So it was just kind of just to see them and go, actually put things into perspective. And yeah, we all wanted to win. We all wanted to win a semi-final and get to that World Cup final, which is what the target was. But I think you realise that it is a game of football, and your family are always going to be there, and it was just so nice to see them at the end, because sometimes you just need a hug, don't you? And it was like, right, okay, now you got to get ready for the next game. And that's how I kind of worked. It was like, right, okay, I'll use tonight to get over it, but my focus now is to try and win a bronze medal for us against Sweden.
What's your dad like on the sideline, or your mum, like you mentioned, or your husband? I was going to say your fella then, that's so Scouse. But yeah, what are they like? Is he a shouter? Is the, you know, what's the vibe there on the touchline?
Well, my mum's like a little bit like, oh, that was good playing. I just don't think she really knows like what's kind of going on. Stephen's quite quiet. Obviously, him playing football previously, obviously he watches, and we always have conversations when I get back. But obviously when we score, like all jumping all over. But my dad, I can hear him on the sideline still. Like even when I was like younger, he used to shout. He used to get so frustrated with the referee, frustrated with my teammates. And I'm just like, Dad, shut up, man. You're embarrassing. And even now, like, and always hear him when the games were allowing crowds in, like at the Academy Stadium at City, I can still hear him. He'd be like, what is that? Come on, like, get it together. Come on, City. And I'm just like, oh my God, that's my dad. And they're like, can you not just ignore him? I'm like, well, no, he's the only Geordie person in the whole of the crowd, so it's probably going to be my dad. But yeah, I think he gets so involved with it, which I do find it cute, in terms of like, he probably knows more about my fixtures and who we're playing. And about the opposition. He's mad on Twitter, finding out the team news and all this kind of stuff. Whereas I'm a bit like, Dad, I don't really want to know all this information, but I'll let you say it because it's just something that you really enjoy. And yeah, I mean, just to have him on the sideline, it just makes my day, really.
Yeah, it's another question that I've been asking all the guests that have been on the show. You know, we talk about people in the crowd and being amazing, and but you know, sometimes it does take a bad turn, and the abuse that professional footballers suffer from the stands, the pressures of playing, you know, the mental health side of things. It's a big thing, and we really speak about the difficulties, how this could be for the player's family. You know, some of the family members that have come on have said, you know, they've been sat two rows behind seeing, you know, their family member getting abuse. I mean, yeah, I wouldn't want to be sat two lines in front of your dad because he sounds like he'd give it back.
Honestly, well, every game, like, I mean, they don't miss a game, whether it's home or away, and we always get, like, say, 4 free tickets on a Sunday for home games, and you probably hardly get any for away games. I'm like, right, okay, well, to the administrator, I'm like, I kind of need 15 today. And she's like, Steph, why every time? Like, and I'm like, I know, but they all want to come and watch. But yeah, I think that's the hardest part for the families, I think, at the games, and when you probably hear people saying stuff about me or even some of the other family's daughters, I think it's really hard to bite your lip. And I think, I know previously when I used to go and watch Stephen play, and I'm listening to Bradford fans speak about it, and I'm dying to get up and say something, yeah, because obviously you start to be protective and you love them and you want to kind of have the back, but you've just got to learn to bite your tongue. And he's like, I think the biggest thing is that whenever people do say something, I kind of always prove them wrong in a way with my performance or all the stuff that I've done previously. And I think at the minute he's got a big bugbear about Twitter and people's opinions and whether it's team of the week. And he's like, sometimes, Steph, I don't know how you don't make team of the week. And I'm like, Dad, like, just leave it is what it is. Like, as long as, like, we know that I'm doing okay, my manager's happy, then that's all we can do. And he's like, can I write something? And I'm like, no, Dad. I'm like, this is just going to cause the biggest arguments ever. And I'm just like, let's just be quiet. Like, silence speaks louder than words. Yeah. And you just kind of go on. But I understand from their point of view, they want to kind of stick up for the daughter. And obviously my teammates as well, when people are quite negative. And I think the more successful you are as well, I think people are quite quick to jump on to any negative that does happen, whether it's a bad pass, you concede a goal or whatever it might be, people are quite quick to shoot you down. So I think that comes with the job, and ultimately it's about accepting that. And sometimes you have to probably have them conversations with your family, but ultimately they understand more now than ever.
Steph Horton will be hoping to lead England to the Euros in 2022. And we'll also be hoping to make the plane to the Olympics in Tokyo later this summer. Up next, we delve into Steph's experiences at the 2012 Olympics, her club career at Man City, and how proud she is of the steps the women's game has taken.
It just blows my mind sometimes. I'm like, I'm so proud of everybody that's actually been through that journey and actually helped get the women's game where it is now, but also the faith that clubs have got now in how good this sport is and how good it can be.
You're listening to Steph Horton, my unsung hero, on TalkSport.
Steph Horton, my unsung hero, with Chelsea Grimes on TalkSport.
And in towards Steph Horton. She couldn't score again, could she? Yes, she could! This is incredible! What an Olympic game Steph Horton's having!
Hi, I'm Steph Horton, and my unsung hero is my dad, Len.
So your dad, Len, I heard he was a bit of a baller, wasn't he? Was he semi-pro?
Yeah, he was semi-pro. I think, obviously, back then, you probably played for two or three teams. He didn't just play for one team, and he used to play for a Saturday team, which was his semi-pro team, and then a Sunday team, which was the local football club. But yeah, he still thinks that he's a better centre-half than me and he scores better free kicks. But yeah, we'll put that one to a vote. But I think ultimately he's probably, I know that he was one of the best footballers in the village. The people that I speak to were like, oh yeah, like, Len was a great footballer. He was very talkative. He was competitive. He wanted to win. And I think I get them sort of traits from him, especially that competitiveness. I think you always just want to win, even if it's a game of cards or a game of Scrabble. You want to always be the winner.
I was going to say, yeah, at Christmas, what's it like playing board games in your house?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty of fights and there's plenty of cheating. But, yeah, I mean, they do get competitive. But, hey, I absolutely love the fact that that's what we're all like. It's not even just me. It's my brother as well. Like, it's like you kind of win at all costs. And it's like even just bragging rights for the night that you've won.
Yeah, whoever loses in my house has to do the dishes, so I do everything to avoid that.
No chance of my brother doing that, to be fair.
Steph Horton, oh, yes. What an equaliser! And really well played and well worked that.
We talked a lot about England, but we can't leave this conversation without talking about the Olympics, because, I mean, just to say that you've played in the Olympics is pretty special, right? Just talk to me about the Olympics, Steph. What was that like for you?
I think when people say, like, what is your favourite tournament, or, like, what is the tournament that you always want to be involved in? As a footballer, it's always, like, I want to be part of a World Cup. Like, that's the pinnacle of your career. But to have experienced the Olympics in London was out of this world. I think it wasn't even just the football part of it. I think it was being around so many unbelievable athletes that have worked so hard over 4 years to be there, and to watch them work and to celebrate each other's success. It really opened my eyes in terms of there was just no jealousy whatsoever. It was all about supporting each other, and ultimately we're Team GB and we wanted to get as many medals as we possibly can, and that ethos was unbelievable. And I think being so young and experiencing that, like, really kind of paved the way for me to be better and to be more supportive of my teammates and to try and be successful together. But to experience London 2012 and to be in the Olympic Village, to be around these athletes, but also to play at some unbelievable stadiums, which at the time we'd never ever done before, was, you never forget them experience. And you look back to the goals that we scored, the victories that we had. We had such an amazing time. Like, that's why I'm so excited for this next Olympics, because I want other people to experience what we did.
I mean, you scored in each group stage game as well.
Yeah, from left back. And
yeah, you got named left back of the tournament.
Great Britain score. The first goal of the London Olympic Games is scored by Great Britain fullback Stephanie Houghton.
What was your favourite memory of that tournament?
I'd probably say the Brazil game. The Brazil game at Wembley, I think. To be able to play at Wembley Stadium, for one, was a dream come true. To have 70,000 people there supporting us, and to obviously beat Brazil, who had one of the best players in the world, Marta. I mean, the odds were kind of stacked against us, and to obviously score was just even...
You pop up.
Just kind of topped it all off, to be honest. I think me and Ellen never slept for, like, about 2 days after that game. We're just like, oh, my God, did that happen? The adrenaline's just running, and, yeah, it was unreal. I think it really, for us personally as players, but for the women's game, it really kind of... I think that was definitely the turning point in terms of people actually trying to take the game seriously and really push it forward.
Oh, just incredible, Steph. What dreams are made of. We're going to refocus on your club career. You know, you joined Arsenal from Leeds in 2010, spent 3 successful years there before joining City, where you remain today. Firstly, you've pointed out to us, you know, some key influences in your career. Michael Mulhern, former Sunderland boss, Vic, former Arsenal manager, Laura Harvey, Nick Cushion, former managers, coaches. You clearly have a lot of respect for, but how important is that? Do you think that's why you've become such a respectable figure in the game? Just because, you know, you've got so many thank yous all the time, and you genuinely are a lovely person. I've had the pleasure of speaking to you a few times now, and
you're just
amazing on and off the pitch, Steph, honestly.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think obviously all the managers that you've named have played a pivotal role in every step of my career, not just at the time, but now I think back to what I've learned from them. All of them are unbelievable people that I've always respected them because of what they've done, but also the way that they were with me. And when you have your family on top of that, I think I've been so lucky to have all them amazing people around us every single day.
You know, Steph, when it comes to matters off the field as well, you were awarded an MBE in 2016. You know, just going back to the beginning of this interview and you're talking about the patch of grass that you might have played on at the side when, you know, people were playing cricket. When you look back of what you've actually achieved, and I don't want a PR answer or anything now, I want the actual Northern Steph to talk to me. Like, can you believe it, what you've done?
Nah, no. I didn't have any expectations to do anything like I have so far in my career. I think even when I'm talking about little stuff, I'm just like, oh my God, that actually really happened. And you have to pinch yourself sometimes. I mean, obviously you mentioned the MBE, and like, I mean, a few of the girls always kind of take the mick in terms of that I've got that after my name. And sometimes I just forget that I have it after my name. And yeah, I mean, that was a surreal moment to think. You've obviously been recognised for all the hard work that you've done, not just for yourself and your family, but for the game in general, was amazing. And I don't think anybody knew that a girl from South Eton was able to go and visit the Queen and get an award like that. So I think when you have them moments, you're like, you think, OK, this is special for me. But for me, it's always about my family. I think that was a day for them to be able to take, obviously, Stephen, my mum and dad, my grandma and my brother to something like that was, yeah, just to see the smile on their face and how proud they were. It just means all the sacrifices have been worthwhile.
Len was a happy guy that day. Sure he was, you know, he was happy as well. Just reading, you know, the list of honours, you know, you've led City to two FA Cups, three Continental Cup successes, the FA Women's Super League title, as well as landing the PFA Merit Award in 2019. You know, when you look at the facilities and the setup at City from where you've come from, you know, from where I've come from, when the women's game, like you said, wasn't even professional, how proud are you as well to still be here and just to see the change, what's going on in and around the game?
Still hanging on, still here, but yeah, I mean, no, I've been that's what I think I'm like more proud of, is because I've actually seen both sides of kind of the game in terms of the facilities we used to train on. We used to only train once a week and we were lucky to even get a pitch with floodlights, and you're playing until it gets dark, until you can't even see the ball anymore.
We were lucky to get a kit. You know what I mean?
Exactly. So like hand-me-down kits, first team kits that were extra, extra large men's, and you turn up to training and you've got one set of kit and you haven't to pay to play, and to now be able to play on the pitches that we do and to be able to get the right nutrition, to get the right recovery strategies. And it just blows my mind sometimes. I'm like, I'm so proud of everybody that's actually been through that journey and actually helped get the women's game where it is now, but also the faith that clubs have got now in how good this sport is and how good it can be.
Oh, it is. It's crazy. It's insane how far the game's come. I'm just super proud to see everyone up there like yourself. We're coming to the end of it now, but you know, what would you say your proudest moment's been? We've touched on a few, which is, you were like, that's up there. And also, you know, what do you think your dad, Leonard, say was his proudest moment watching you play?
I think England captain was probably the proudest moment. I think for both of us, I think mainly because you're able to play for your country, which is an unbelievable honour in itself, but to be able to lead your country is a whole different thing. And I think because we never expected it or never presumed it, made it even more special. And yeah, I think definitely for both me and my dad, I think that would be my proudest moment and his proudest moment of my career so far.
And looking to the future, you know, what's the goal?
I think for me, I mean, obviously I'm really enjoying my football at the moment. I'm absolutely loving playing for Man City. I feel as though I'm playing well. So just to kind of make sure I stay at the top of my game, be the best centre-half that I can be in this country, but also in Europe, and win titles with City. But obviously my aim is to win something with England before I retire. I think I've always wanted to do it. We've been so close the last few years. So that would be a nice retiring present if we were to do something special in the Euros or even at the Olympics next year.
And last question, Steph, you know, would you be where you are today without the advice, the guidance and the help of your unsung hero, do you think?
No, not a chance. I mean, I owe a lot to him anyway, just in general, but I think in terms of my football career, I think without him, I think there's not a chance I'd be sitting here talking to you today.
Oh, Steph, thank you so much. And I kind of feel like Len was with us, so thanks to Len as well.
I'll make sure I fill him in. He'll be like, I'll have a pint later. So,
good luck with everything, Steph, and I can't wait to see what else you go on to win.
Oh, thank you. It means a lot. Thank you.
You've been listening to Steph Horton, my unsung hero, with me, Chelsea Grimes. I mean, for me personally, to be able to sit down with England captain Steph Horton was a dream, and she's just even nicer than I ever imagined. There's no one else I'd want England to have leading them out. What an absolute legend. A reminder, if you missed any of the show, you can listen back on the TalkSport app. Next week, reality TV star turned footballer Mark Wright reveals who his unsung hero is.
Everything I do, I look to see if he's impressed a bit, especially football. I always turn and make sure I know that he's proud and that his opinion matters so much.
You've been listening to My Unsung Hero with me, Chelsea Grimes, on TalkSport.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds? We set them. Form guides? We've got them. Expert opinions? We share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.